Hello, awesome humans, and welcome to today's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and I'm so grateful that you're here. As a quick reminder, we record this podcast with a live virtual audience, so you will hear me respond to comments and questions throughout. If you'd like to join our live audience, I would love it. You can go to nataliekogan.com to see the schedule of upcoming shows and to sign up. Now, before we dive into today's topic, just take a deep breath to arrive in this moment right now. This time is for you, and I hope you find this episode really valuable. Hello, awesome humans. Welcome to the Awesome Human Podcast Live. I'm so excited we're all gathering. It's been a little bit since our last time together, so I'm so grateful we're all gathering, whether you're joining me here live for Awesome Human Podcast Live on Zoom. Hello, everyone. Whether you're watching this as a recording or on Facebook, or if you're listening as a podcast, hello, everyone. Welcome to whatever day of the week this is. It's Wednesday for me. And so I think our topic today is so timely. We're going to be talking about joy. Oh my goodness, can't we all use a little bit more joy? I think the answer is always yes. But in particular, we're going to be talking about this idea that I really love called micro joys. And I have a very special guest joining me in just a little bit. Her name is Cindy Spiegel, and she's the author of a book by the title Micro Joys. So we're going to talk about what is micro joy and how do we find joy and micro joys in life, even when things are difficult or uncertain or challenging. So that's our topic for today. In the meantime, as so many folks are joining the Zoom, hello, hello, everyone. I'm just going to open my chat. And if you're listening as a podcast, I just want to remind you, you're always welcome to join for our live recording. We always record the podcast live, and you get to be part of an audience and see me and our guests on video and ask questions. So it's really fun to join live. So if you want to join live, you can just go to nataliekogan.com/podcast and all the details are there. So hello to everyone who's just joined. We just had a flood of people. I always like to say this, you're never late to Awesome Human Podcast Live. You're always exactly on time. And before we dive in, before our guest joins us, before we talk about micro joys, let's begin. We always begin the podcast with a little ritual. It's the Awesome Human Ritual. So if this is your first time, roll with it. If you've been here with me a lot, you know what I'm about to say. Take a moment to complete this sentence. Today, I'm an awesome human because. Today, I'm an awesome human because. And if you're here with me live, please put your responses in chat. I'd love to be inspired by what you share. And if you're listening, literally take a pause. You can also press pause and shut me up for a moment and really complete the sentence and acknowledge something about yourself that you appreciate. And I always remind you why we do this, because the voice of the inner critic in your head is really loud. All of us have that inner critic, that inner judge, right? And one of the reasons we all have that voice, just to geek out on neuroscience for a moment, is because your brain has what's called a negativity bias. All of our brains focus much more on what's wrong, including with ourselves, than what's right. And so we constantly have this voice finding all these things that are wrong with us. We have to learn to make our inner appreciator voice as loud and louder. And that's why in all my work and all my talks and in these podcasts, I really want to encourage you to practice. It is a practice. It's not going to happen magically. Really acknowledging something good about yourself, something unique, something you did or you didn't do, something that makes you an awesome human. So I love to see all the responses pouring in. I'm going to read a few because I find them really inspiring. And if you've been to one of my talks, I can see some folks saying hello who have been in my audience as hello. So I love seeing the community come together for my keynotes and different ways. I ask my audiences to do this at the beginning of every talk, and many people tell me this is really hard. It's really hard to acknowledge something good about ourselves, and I think that should be the reminder. That should be the light bulb. It should not be hard to acknowledge something good about yourself, so we have to practice doing it. All right, I'm just going to read a couple. Today, I'm an awesome human because I am getting ready to host a Labor Day cookout this weekend with 50 awesome friends and family. Oh my God, Mallory, that you are a super, super awesome human. That is a crazy feat. Today, I'm an awesome human because I helped my four-year-old get ready for school in a kind and patient way. Yes, Emily, my daughter is 19, but I very, very, very much remember the 4 and the 3 and the 5-year-old getting ready for school. So that's awesome. Today, I'm an awesome human because I practiced talking back to my brain last night when someone was giving me negative feedback. Yes, Karen, for those of you who are not familiar, talking back to your brain is one of the core emotional fitness practices that I teach. When your brain makes up lots of stories, you get to edit and talk back. So you rock for practicing that. Today, I'm an awesome human because I went to my workout. Yes, I'm an awesome human. Wow, they're scrolling so fast. Today, I'm an awesome human because I went to work and I'm getting things done despite being really tired. Yeah, that's awesome, Amy. Sometimes we got to push through. All right, one more. Today, I'm an awesome human because I am learning to slow down. Yes, Ainsley, that is awesome. And I love how the last two I read, there's tons and tons here, by the way. I wish I could just sit here and read them all. But I love how those last two are in contrast to each other. You can be awesome for pushing and working hard, and you can be awesome for slowing down. Like, it's all about the awesome humanness in yourself. So remember to practice this. Don't wait for the Awesome Human Podcast to recognize something good in yourself. That's a wonderful thing to do first thing in the morning, right? Because what do we do first thing in the morning? I don't know about you, but I get up and I look in the bathroom mirror and immediately my brain finds all these kind of things. Oh, you didn't do this yesterday. Oh my God, look at the gray hair. You know, it just finds all the things wrong. So how cool would it be if instead you were like, you know what? Today I'm an awesome human because, and we can counter that. We can practice that. So thank you everyone for being here. I love the excitement about learning about micro joys. I love seeing how many folks are here. Before we dive in, I have a fun, exciting announcement, and then I'm going to tell you a little, I always like to share just a little story from my life related to our topic, and then Cindy Spiegel will be here, the author of Micro Joys. And I'm going to, before she gets here, I need to grab her book from my bookshelf. But here is my awesome, exciting announcement. Some of you already know this because you're on my email, but my awesome, exciting announcement is that my brand new journal, the Awesome Human Journal, is now available for pre-order. And there's no way that I can express this through a screen or your earbuds of how excited I am, but it is available for pre-order. I'm going to put a link in comments just in case you haven't pre-ordered yet. Why not? I'm just kidding. I just announced it. So I actually don't even have the actual journal. It's coming out on October 10th. So that's the day that it meets the world. But the cool thing about pre-ordering is I created really cool bonuses for you guys. And if you go to nataliekogan.com/books, you can find the journal there and all the details. But if you just pre-order one copy, I made this really beautiful digital gift pack for you. It has my famous notes to self from the journal that you love so much. And it has a lot of my artwork in it. And someone texted me yesterday to say they pre-ordered, you immediately get the digital, it's like a gift. And they said, oh my God, I made it background on my computer and I had such a great day. There's lots of other bonuses, but that's my favorite one. But I'm so excited. You are all the first people other than my family. For all of you who are here and with me on Zoom, you are the first people to see it. So this isn't even the real journal. It's coming from my publisher tomorrow. This is what's called a little behind the scenes. This is what's called a wet proof. So when the printer is ready to have the journal or a book, when they're ready to make it go like it's ready, they send me and the publisher approved. So I get to share it with you guys before the rest of the world. So here it is. And I'm not going to talk about it. I see Cindy's joining us. So I'm going to jump to Cindy shortly, but this is too fun not to share. So I illustrated the journal myself, and I'm not a professional illustrator. You're looking at all my art behind me, but I'm not a professional illustrator. So this was a feat in talking back to my inner critic. But I just want to show you some parts of it. So one of my favorite things in the journal is I've been trying for years to find a way to give you all a way to practice your emotional fitness skills in a few minutes a day. So I figured it out, or my first step in figuring out. So the journal has these daily practice pages. So you practice all of your 5 emotional fitness skills in just a few minutes a day. And see this? Today I'm an awesome human because you get to do this daily. So it has daily practice pages. It has one of my favorite things I did in the journal. A lot of the practices that I teach or talk about in this podcast, they can be a little bit abstract. So I created little templates for you. So this is a really beautiful practice of getting out of the valley of struggle. When you get into that place, you're not how it should be. Life is not how it should be. Your partner is not how they should be. This is a really great way to use acceptance to get out of the valley of struggle. It's one of the most popular practices I teach. So you get templates like this to work through them. You have, what is another fun thing I want to show you? Oh, there's awesome human awards, obviously, because adulting is hard, okay? Adulting is hard. So I made you lots of awards. Here are the, mini neuroscience lessons. Okay, you guys know I'm a total research geek, right? If you've been with me for a while, you know that. So I have lots of little neuroscience tidbits in here. And let's see, what is another fun thing I want to share with you? Oh, there's creativity breaks. So you know that for me, making art and being creative is something that is absolutely essential to my well-being. For all of you, I also firmly know this. I don't just believe it. Being creative, you are all creative. To be human is to be creative, but expressing our creativity is part of our well-being. And so I have all kinds of creativity breaks in there for you. And your journal will not come apart, by the way. This is my wet proof. So this is a fun creativity break. This is one of my favorites. Draw your self-portrait through the eyes of someone who loves you. It's one of my favorite workshops that I teach, and then I give you a space to do it. It's one of my favorite workshops that I teach, but in the journal, you get to do it. Anyway, there's so much in here. I'll be sharing more about the journal in the coming weeks, but I had to share it with you all because you're my people and you got to see it before. Literally, the only people who've seen it in the flesh is my family. Believe me, they've seen it 1,000 times. So thank you everyone for your support, for your excitement. And when you pre-order, I just want to remind you, so you can order it from wherever you want, Amazon, your local bookstore, whatever you want. But to get the bonuses, you have to then come back to nataliekogan.com and go to the journal page and fill out a little form and let us know that you did it. And then you get your bonuses. So please do that because I want to make sure I sent you wonderful gifts, but you actually have to go and let us know. It's very easy. The form is super short. I don't even ask for your receipt because it's awesome human honor code. All right. Thank you for being part of my joy. And without further ado, I see Cindy. I'm going to spotlight Cindy so we can all see. All right, there she is. Hello, Cindy. Welcome to our awesome human podcast.
Isn't this a treat? Thank you for having me.
Well, aren't you a treat? I have to tell you, I've been following you very quietly on Instagram for a while. And then when I saw your book come out and it was about micro joys, I was like, okay, Natalie, this is time for us to meet. So it's a treat to have you. Thank you. You're in a small company of a couple hundred awesome humans who are here with us live on Zoom and on Facebook and lots more folks who are listening, but in the future when we release it as a podcast. So thank you for being here. We had so many people really excited to talk about micro joys. I think we're in a moment in time where from everything that's going on in the world to back to school to all kinds of things, life is really a lot. And so it's really, really exciting to talk about micro joys. Before I say anything else, I have to grab your book from my shelf. Okay, I wasn't entirely organized, but here it is. As I told you, Cindy is the author of this incredibly wonderful, joyful. I love, Cindy, that it's smaller. When I got it in the mail, I was like, I love it. So this is Cindy's book. It's called Micro Joys, Finding Hope, Especially When Life Is Not Okay. So Cindy, welcome. And can we just jump in? Can I ask you, we'll start with a really simple question. Can you share one of the micro joys from your day so far?
Yes. So one of the micro joys from my day so far, first of all, what a treat to be here. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. One of the micro joys from my day so far was that it was pouring rain. It was pitch black in our home today. And probably 20 minutes before the podcast, it cleared right up. I don't know if you could see how sunny it is, but now it's very sunny outside.
Oh my God. Today. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
So, I mean, when I say pouring, it was pouring. So that was a micro joy. Doesn't change the world as it is, but it certainly adds some joy to this moment.
You know what? I'm with you 100%. It was pouring this morning. It is still pouring. So I'm going to wait for your micro joy to reach us.
And I hope it does.
I love that. Does. So Cindy, your example almost answers a question, but what is a micro joy?
So a microjoy are these inexplicable moments of joy that exist regardless of our current circumstance. And that is the most important piece, because what it means is that we can experience these moments of joy even when we are struggling, when we are grieving, when we are dealing with difficult emotions. Mm. So joy in one hand and grief in the other.
Mm. That's it, you know, it's, and I was reading this in your work, and I'm going to ask you to share a little bit about the experience that brought you to this idea, but it's one of the things that I really love about this concept, because I'm sure this maybe was true for you and for many folks who are listening. I spent most of my life thinking that it's kind of binary, that we either are in struggle and in pain and everything is horrible, or everything is amazing. And I spent so much of my life trying to chase the amazing. So I really love that. Can you share a little bit about the really challenging experience that you went through that got you to start paying attention to this, to these micro joys and looking for micro joys?
Yeah, you know, I wrote a book in 2018 called A Year of Positive Thinking. 365 ways to, you know, really sort of grow into this space of positive thinking. By 2020, the world collapsed around all of us. We went into a global pandemic. This was not a Cindy thing. This was a global thing. Within 3 months, as Black Lives Matter took the global stage, my 32-year-old nephew was murdered walking to a friend's house. Within 4 months of that, my beloved mother passed away unexpectedly. Within a month of my mom's passing, my 48-year-old brother had a stroke and went into cardiac arrest. 2.5 months later, in the height of a pandemic, he was released from the ICU. And within a month of him coming home, I was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer. So all of that happened within a 10-month span of time. And the reason I mentioned my first book is only to say that the woman who wrote that book in 2018 was not the woman I was towards the end of 2020. I was completely broken. I didn't recognize myself. And what I knew for the first time in my life was that I no longer needed to think my way out of anything. I needed to feel. So though I am a firm believer in positive thinking, I studied it. It's the foundation to so much of my work. I knew that in that moment, I needed to just allow myself to fall apart and feel. And that's really how microjoys came to be, is the sort of coming out of that space and finding joy anyway.
That's so, I mean, as you were talking, and I'd read this before in your book, and it's, I'm really sorry, Cindy, that's so much for any human. But one of the things I admire about you is that you had a choice. You could have just fallen apart and there could have been not an and look for joy. And I think it speaks a lot to, I think it speaks a lot to who you are, but I also wonder, and I want to ask you this. One of the things I've been thinking about, because I, you know, in my work, I talk about joy and how we can access it. And one of the things I've been thinking about for the last couple of years is that we as humans have this natural capacity, all of us have this natural capacity and almost like a natural drive to joy. And that nothing that happens in life, whether it's overwhelming grief like you went through or challenges, you know, I've gone through a lot of challenges in my life, including coming to this country as a refugee and not speaking English and living in the but it, to me, it's almost like we have this drive, this instinct, this need. It's not a desire. It's not a thought. It's like this biological, like hunger. We need food. Does that make sense to you? Does that land?
Yeah. I often say for so many of us, you know, we have this innate way of wanting to access joy. It's not a want. It's just innate in us, right? Joy is our nature. And I think that becoming an adult in the world sort of breaks us of that sometimes, you know, because we're sort of forced into these boxes that ask that we behave a certain way and show up a certain way. And I really think you see this sort of way of being most in children. You know, they know what joy is and they can't necessarily describe it, but they are it, you know? And I think as human beings, we all have that. We have that capacity because it's who we are.
Yeah. I want to share with you, as I was preparing and writing down some thoughts and questions I wanted to ask you, I wanted to share, if I may, with you and everyone, because I was thinking about what is a micro joy story from my life. And obviously, well, I'll have many, but the one that is probably the formative one. So when we were coming to the US as refugees, we left Russia and we were Jewish. Jews were persecuted. So this was not like a nice. We were allowed to bring two suitcases per person, $600. That was it. We gave up our citizenship. We were nomads and there was no guarantee. So it was really, I mean, it was overwhelming to me as a 13-year-old. My parents, I cannot even imagine. Now that I'm a parent, I can't even imagine that. So our first stop, we lived in Vienna in Austria for 2 weeks while the Americans kind of transported us. And then we spent a couple months in a refugee camp in Italy. And so here we were in Vienna. We're living in this absolutely disgusting, like dilapidated building in the red light district. I wonder if it was because we were illegal. So that was kind of safer. You know, I shared this tiny room with my parents, you know, communal bathroom. It was awful. And, you know, the stress of it all. And so all we can do is wait because we're kind of part of this process. And one day my dad, Cindy, is one of my closest friends. He's this incredible. He's a crazy triple PhD he's a brilliant man, warmest human. And he got a job at night unloading trucks at the food market in Vienna just to make a couple dollars for extra food. So he comes in, it's like 7 a.m. He smells disgusting. I'll never forget that. And he says to me and my mom that we're going to go see the Vienna Opera House today because it's free and we get to do it. And my mom was like, yeah, great. And I was like, hard no, as my 19-year-old daughter would say. I was like, no, what are you talking about? Like, we are here in this disgusting place. We have no money. We don't know where we're going. You want to go enjoy yourself? I'll never forget, Cindy, what my dad said to me. It's like one of those moments. It's like on slow motion in my head. Mm-hmm. He looked at me and he said, you know what? You're absolutely right. Life sucks right now. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. He said, but we have a choice. We can either sit here and just wallow in the awful, or we can go do something that doesn't cost any money, that see something beautiful and be together. And that's what we're going to do. And by the way, if you think at that point, I was like, oh, okay, Dad, you are so wise. No, first of all, I was a teenager. You do not agree with your parents. That's very bad precedent. But second of all, the reason that this memory stands out for me and why I wanted to share it with you, Cindy, is because I had this black and white idea. Like, I thought when things are bad, you just focus on the bad and how I thought I had to be like the watchman of the struggle. Like, I had to sit there. And I couldn't allow myself, oh my God, a moment of joy. No. Because I thought it was wrong. I really in retrospect, and by the way, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because I imagine I'm not alone and maybe you used to feel that way. Like, it's wrong to feel joy when things are awful. And we went to the Opera House, by the way. I had to go. My parents were like, you don't care. You're coming. And my dad, he's a very charismatic person. He befriended this gentleman in line to get the free tickets. And after the Opera House, this gentleman who turned out to be this British professor, I don't know how my dad did it in broken English, by the way, he did it. This professor invited us all for ice cream. And there's a photo from that day. I mean, ice cream is always joy, but like, we have no money for bread. And this guy's buying us ice cream in this beautiful cafe in Vienna. And there's a photo from that day. And everyone, my parents are like glowing because it's amazing. And yeah. I cut my face out of that photo a couple years after we came here, Cindy, because the look on my face is kind of like this. I was holding the struggle. Everyone else is enjoying this micro joy of getting ice cream from a stranger. What an act of kindness. I couldn't let it go. So I wonder if you would. So thank you for letting me share that. And everyone, it's one of the most it took me about 30 years to get the wisdom my dad was trying to tell me, but I did get it. But I wonder, like, I'd love to hear your thoughts about that, Cindy, like that feeling that I know many people have, like, it's just wrong to feel joy when things are terrible or people we love are suffering.
Yeah. You know, I think that's often our default. And something that I really leaned into during that 10-month period of time, but really I'd say the 3 years following that, was this idea that we can feel all of it. Mm. You know, sometimes we do need to sit in the struggle. Sometimes we do. And microjoys is not about saying you should not feel what you feel. It's saying there are times that you need to do that. And there are times that you don't need to do that. But there is a choice, right? You have the choice. And for me, there was so much time that I had to spend just sad. I had to be angry. I had to be sad. And that wasn't the time for me to notice necessarily what was happening around me, right? Because we have to give ourselves that. There's a balance. But this ability to really understand that even in the midst of struggle, we can find some semblance of joy is profound, because so many of us see this, as we talked about earlier, you know, as a binary. You're either in it and it's horrible and you're sad, or you're happy and bright and alive. And this idea is really saying, no, sometimes you're all of it, you know, and even the concept of microjoys, it's this idea that these moments of beauty exist, whether we are struggling or not. All we are doing is noticing them, right? We don't have to create them because they're there, but we get a choice. And, you know, I can't say this enough, because we also have a choice to sit in the difficult moments, and that too is necessary.
I love this idea of choice, Cindy. It's such a, it's really the foundation of what I've learned in this whole experience, and kind of what I share in my work is, I think that's the most important thing, is to recognize that at any moment in time, we have a choice as to what to notice, what to pay attention to, which feelings to recognize. And there's no right or wrong choice, but that's I often, you know, in my work, when I speak or from our community, I'll hear someone say, you know, my life is, I'm just getting through the day. Like, I have no joy. Yeah. And what I reply with is, life is challenging. Life is full of challenges. At times it's overwhelmingly challenging, but just, you know, one of my core themes in my life is being human is hard. It's just hard. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's harder, but it's hard. But it's not about, can I feel joy or not? I think it's making the choice to look for it. Yeah. Just like we can make a choice to look for something to be grateful for. We can make a choice to do something kind. We can make a choice to rest. We can make a choice to do hard work. And I think that that's one of the things that for me really, and I had to go, by the way, you know, the only time I really understood what my dad was trying to teach me, it wasn't after I went through a really severe burnout 7 years ago and really got to a very, very dark place where I realized that it wasn't going to hit me on the head. A better, more fulfilling, more joyful life is not going to rain on me. I had a choice. And so I think that that's actually the most important thing about joy that I've learned is it requires action. I think one or the other, I wonder your thoughts on this. I feel like the way we talk about joy often in our society, it's kind of like you just, it's spontaneous. You just feel joy. I think of joy as a practice. It requires us to take an action. It could just be noticing, but that's an action.
It is. I think it is active, right? I think in many ways, it's a verb, right? We have to do something. Though there are, you know, there are those times when it rains down on us, and how lucky for us when that happens. Yes. But more times than not, it is about taking an action and choosing something differently. You know, choosing to come out of whatever you are going through, even if it's temporarily, right? It's not going to change what you have going on, but saying right now in this moment, I get to choose something else. I get to choose joy. And so it is very much an action. You know, that doesn't mean it has to be a big, you know, a big thing to do, but you have to choose. And sometimes that is the only action.
Yeah. And I think that's really powerful to think about. You know, I used to think when I would hear the word action, I would think it's like physically doing something, but directing where we direct our attention is an action. And I think that's for me, that was a big revelation. I can choose where to direct my attention, and that is action. What do you say, you know, what's coming to mind as we're talking is, and I used to be this person, by the way, but what do you say to someone who's really, who is not yet out of the binary view, right? So I have some very dear people in my life who, when something is challenging, it becomes who they are. And they really believe that the only correct way to honor that difficult situation, say a loved one being in pain, is to suffer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you say, Cindy? Like, what? Because I imagine a lot of folks in the audience are thinking about that. We all have those people in our lives, or we are them. I used to be that person.
Yeah, it's like, let us be clear. Sometimes we are that person.
Of course.
You know, I come from a family of those people who I love dearly. What I have learned over the years is that it is not for me to say anything. Mm-hmm. All that I can do is mirror these behaviors, mirror and give people permission through mirroring, because the surefire way to get people to not listen to you is to tell them how to feel. Right. But what I've learned when it comes to this idea of micro joys is that all that I can do is live into this. Mm. And in doing that, people will bear witness to that and they will pick that up or they won't. Mm. But what I can no longer do, and this has really come out of the last few years, is I can no longer try to change people's minds who don't want their minds to be changed.
Because ultimately it's not possible. Right? No, we can't do it. We think we can. I wrote about this, I think, in my first book, where I used to be like the ultimate, like, I want to change people for them. I want to help them be better, you know, and I had this story in my head that I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for them, because I was doing it for me. Let's just, I've been with my husband for 27 years. If he was here, he'd be like, yeah, I was doing it for me. But also, I think what you're saying is exactly right, is we can't change other people, but we can be, you know, one of my teachers says, be the change you want to see in others. So we can practice these things. And because our behaviors are contagious, because as human beings, we do pick up on behaviors from each other, including emotions. I think that absolutely resonates. You know, what I'm thinking about is my mom, who I love very much, but my mom is someone for whom it's especially when it's her loved one, like when her mom was sick. My grandma was very, very sick. She had a stroke from which she did not recover and was in a horrible state for 3 years before she passed away. I was so afraid for my mom, because she just kind of was, that was all. And I, of course, I feel that and I understand that. But one of the, I remember there was this moment, because I didn't know, I didn't even have the words, like you're eloquently talking about it. But I remember I was in the hospital room, or this rehab room, where my mom would sit with my grandma all the time. Mm. And I got there and I just felt there was just this heaviness, of course, even though, like, you know, my grandma was fully awake, couldn't move. It was kind of the worst of all worlds. She couldn't speak. Yeah. I was 100% aware. And I remember I just had this, it wasn't even conscious. Like, I just wanted, I think the word I would use right now, Cindy, is I just wanted a moment of micro joy for them. Yeah. And I remember I was coming from yoga class and I just learned how to do a headstand. So the only thing I could think of in that moment was to do a headstand in this hospital room in front of my grandma and my mom. And I just did it. And I will never forget this, because I remember my grandma sort of, she could lift herself, like she lifted herself out of bed and gave me a thumbs up with a sort of a smile. It's one of my proudest moments in life. But I remember looking at my mom and it almost felt like, I felt like I was cheating. I was cheating on suffering.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Mm. You were cheating on suffering, because there's this part of you that felt like you should be in that too. You know, I think we carry the weight of our emotions and we carry the weight of the people around us. Mm. And it does feel like, you know, I will often talk about how when I was growing up, I was like the walking sunshine in my very cynical family, who I love and am very close to. There is this sort of feeling of carrying the weight of what they're experiencing and then feeling simultaneously like you should be in that and you're not. And what's wrong with you for not being in it?
And that second part is, and I'm interrupting because I just want to, like, I want your thoughts on this. That's still a really challenging part for me. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about your family. I grew up in a family where if your loved one is suffering, the way you show love is to suffer with them.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's true for a lot of folks. You know, my father is African-American. My mother's Jewish. I'm like, suffering is inherently part of my DNA, you know, like that is so much how we show love in our families. And I think that that's true for a lot of people. Mm. And so what I've really had to just come to accept is that we will not all see this. The lens we have on the world is different, right? I can't make someone suffer less. They can't make me suffer more. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we can just do the best we can, but there has certainly had to, I've had to just let go of what I can't control when it comes to how people manage difficult times, because I can't change that for them. And if that is truly, you know, how one feels in that moment, and that's how you show love, then I have to let you have that too. So this is simply, you know, this book and so much of my work is simply offering another way. Whether you take it or not is your choice.
Again, back to choice. I love that. And, you know, Doug just posted something in the chat as we're talking about this is, you know, it's about empathy versus immersing in sadness, right? It's about like we can, and I think that's a really powerful idea. Thanks, Doug. Like we can witness and understand and even feel some of the pain that our loved one or someone is feeling, but we don't have to take on their entire state. We can choose differently. And maybe from that, they will choose. So I think that's powerful. And just as a reminder, everyone, if you have questions that you want me to ask Cindy, the best place to put them is into the Q&A. It's at the bottom of your screen. I do monitor chat, but there's lots of chat. So if you put them in Q&A, I'll definitely see them. But I'm also, as you can see, looking at chat as well. So I'd love to talk about, you know, the actual concept of micro joys and why you call it micro joys, and give us some examples and maybe how to, like, if I decide, okay, I'm gonna make the choice, right? I'm ready to make the choice. What do I do?
Yeah. So I'll answer the first part of that first, okay, which is how I came to call it micro joys, because they're not, in fact, always tiny. You know, when I first started talking about micro joys on social media, I did think they were tiny. I thought they were these tiny moments of joy that existed. And then as time went on, I realized that they were so much bigger than that. But what had already happened is I had used the term on social media. And as you do when you say something publicly, it then becomes public domain. Then folks were sending me their micro joys and they started using the term micro joy. So the term just sort of stuck, but it's not because micro joys are small. It's really about them being easily accessible. So it's joy that is easily accessible to you regardless of your current circumstances. So the word stuck and it is now in our vernacular, which is a beautiful thing, but it's not because they're small. Just a few of the things that I think about is I remember the daffodils blooming in the middle of everything I was going through, right? I would go for a walk and I would notice the daffodils blooming. Now those daffodils were going to bloom regardless of my loss, right? They were going to happen. I noticed them, right? I became aware of them. So the foundation of micro joys is really about presence. Right. And there are times when we just cannot be present in the moment. As much as every yogi, and I'm one of them, would tell you that, you know, be present. But there are times when we can't. And so I want to honor that too. But I think about those daffodils and I'm like, that's it, right? They're going to be there no matter what. It's this idea that there is so much beauty and joy that is around us no matter what, when we have the presence of mind to notice it. So the how-to piece, well, there are many, many, many ways to experience or access micro joys, but you know, there's a technique, it's called the 5-4-3-2-1. It's for anxiety. Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
It's
five things. Please share it with the audience.
Well, I may get the order wrong, but it's five things you can see, four things you can touch. It's essentially using your senses, using all of your available senses. And it grounds you in the present moment. So if it's five things you can see, you're simply saying out loud, what are five things I can see? I can see the curtains in my office. I can see a plant. I can see a framed picture, etc. Four things you can, it's not here. I think it's touch.
I think it's
four
touch.
Things you can touch. So you're doing this and you're working your way down until you finally get to one thing that you can taste. And it's two things that, it might be two things that you can hear, but the idea is that it refines our senses, right? And it gets us to a place where we really do become grounded because we are forcing ourselves to, and I hate the word force, but in this case, that's really what it is. We're guiding ourselves to pay deep attention to what is happening around us. And that attention is where micro joys come from, because again, those daffodils were already there.
I love that. That's really beautiful. And, you know, it reminds me, I remember years ago, I talk, you know, gratitude is one of the five core skills that I teach. And I remember I wrote something about, and I got this email from somebody who's part of my community in response to one of my emails. And she said, you know, I want to tell you something. One of her children was in a hospital for a long time. And, you know, as a mother, that's so painful. And she had this other younger child, and she said, we would go visit him. And it was heart-wrenching for the sibling and her. She said, I started to notice that on the way out of the hospital, there was this giant flower bed, and they would change flowers over a period of time. She said, so every day we would come out, and instead of just going to the garage, she said, I told my daughter, like, let's actually look at these and be grateful for how beautiful they are. Yeah. She said it completely changed, like, how they both felt about the visit. And it just came to me, because I think that's exactly what you're talking about. That flower bed was always there.
That's right.
And that woman and her child had every permission to not pay attention. But when they began to pay attention and give it a moment of gratitude for seeing this beauty, it actually gave them so much fuel to deal with the hard stuff. And that's often I actually think about joy. And I've talked about this on social media and in my work. So if you're watching this and this is going to sound familiar, joy is your life fuel. That's how I see our joy. So joy is wonderful to feel, of course, but it is also, I think it's essential for being able to be human and do all the hard things we do. And I think I love, Cindy, that you talk about micro joys. They can be simple, they can be big, but it's about, there's always something that is easily accessible, but it does require us to make the choice to look for it. I think that's right. As we've talked about, the most important thing. And then it needs us to actually look, to be present, to become aware, to actually, maybe it's a visual thing, maybe it's a feeling thing, maybe it's, you know, I remember, when I was going through my burnout, and it was a really rough couple of years, I was sitting in a coffee shop one time, completely zoning out. I really wasn't even able to be in my environment. And then I looked up at my, I don't know how long I was there, half an hour, I don't know. I looked up and someone put a note next to me. It was like a post-it note, but might have been on a receipt, I don't remember. And it said, it's going to be okay. And this person did not know me. They could obviously see I was struggling. It was obvious. Yeah. But I remember my first, I actually love this comment. Like, I remember my first instinct was like, oh my God, what a bunch of BS, right? Like, what a bunch of cheesy Hallmark, like, whatever. This person doesn't know. This. I remember in my brain, this person doesn't know how hard my...
Yes.
But I thank God I grabbed the note and I stuck it in my wallet. And I remember I found it like 6 months later. And I had such a moment of gratitude for that, because that is a micro joy. Here was another human being who wanted, through this tiny act of kindness, to give me encouragement. That is a micro joy. So
that
I
is
love
a micro
that you talk
joy.
About the easily accessible part.
The other, you know, what you just described, I will often say with micro joys, they don't change what is, right? Mm. They don't attempt to change what you are going through. In that moment, right, you were struggling. This person handing you that note, it didn't change your struggle. But what it did was it offered you a moment of respite within the storm. Just a tiny break from it. A tiny moment of respite within the storm. And that is what micro joys offer us. Mm. That's what joy can offer us. You know, it's this break from what is true for us, from the difficulty that we are going through, because sometimes life is hard, right? And we deserve those moments of respite. And I think if we don't accept that piece first, the rest doesn't matter. We deserve to feel those moments of respite, even when the world around us is struggling and when there is suffering in the world. That doesn't mean that we don't deserve breaks from that. We don't put our head in the sand, right? We still do what we can. But even within that, it is okay that we are okay, that we are experiencing joy anyway.
I love that. Joy, a moment of micro joy as a respite from the challenges of life, you know? And that's why I say joy is your fuel, because when you're in a hard thing, let's say you're in a hard race, it's good to like take breaks. It's good to, you know, athletes, they go get a drink of water or they pop their, this is the extent of my running knowledge, Cindy. I'm a walker, not a runner. If you want to torture me, please ask me to run. But the, even they, there's micro respites. And I think it's, yeah, it's really, I love that insight. You know, the other thing you just brought to mind, because you mentioned Black Lives Matter. So when all the protests were going on, one of my really good friends, she lives across the country. We don't see each other a lot. Her name is Michelle. And she's African-American. And I, one day I called her just to be like, how are you? I know she had a young son. And I was calling to really check in on her and with everything that was going on. And I was asking her questions. And then she goes, I'll never forget. And she's like a very bombastic, straight talking, kind of sassy. And she was like, girl, you know what? What I want to talk about right now are two things. I want to know if you've watched any cool Netflix shows, because you always have good ideas, because I'm running out of mine. And can we have the debate about red wine, cold or warm?
Yes. Because
and I realized in that moment, she didn't want to talk about the hard stuff. She wanted a moment with me, just as her girlfriend, to talk about silly stuff, because she wanted, we didn't have these words that you just said, but she just wanted a respite from the storm. Yeah. And then that's we went on an hour sharing Netflix shows and arguing about red wine, because you should never, ever, ever put red wine in the fridge. Please.
Sometimes in the summer, you know, see, I didn't know this was going to come down to this, but now that you've brought it up, sometimes the chilled red in the summer, what are you saying? Yes.
Absolutely. Just sometimes. I love how, all right, so let's see it in chat. Red
fridge or not. And just sometimes.
Sometimes. I love it. Oh, Elizabeth is already in there saying.
Elizabeth knows. Elizabeth knows. She's probably grabbing a bottle out of the fridge.
Right, I love now. It. So there's actually, you know, so my family, most of my family lives in Israel. They didn't make it here. They live in Israel. And it's a very common thing. It's hot a lot. So they put wine in the fridge a lot. And I remember the first time my husband and I were there and at my aunt's house, I go to open the fridge and I just see all this red wine. And I'm not some wine snob. Like I don't know anything about wine. I just like how it tastes. The horribleness about turning 47 as a woman, I don't know if anyone else has this, like I can't actually handle wine without a headache. Yes. That's a separate thing. But I remember I was like, what's up with this? The red wine in the fridge. But when the cool thing, since we're on this wonderful respite topic, we went to Spain, I remember many years ago, and they have this wonderful summer drink. It's called Tinto Verano. It's summer like tinted wine. And they take red wine, ice, and then they put like, I think it's Sprite or 7-Up or ginger ale in it. Mm-hmm. It's completely fabulous. One of my favorite things.
Like a red wine spritzer, basically.
There you go. Becomes a red wine spritzer. So that in that shape, I really, really, really love cold red wine. There's lots of folks here, apparently.
Yeah. That put red sometimes. Wine in. Sometimes. You've got to just lean in.
It's another choice we get to make. We can put red wine in the fridge or not. We can choose a micro joy or we can ignore it. That's also okay. I love that we got to have this conversation. You know, one other thing I wanted to talk about, Cindy, is so I come from a culture in, you know, how many happy Russians have you seen? You know, that's my short, right? Like in Russia, happiness was for stupid people, okay? Right. And this was kind of when I founded a company called Happier and wrote a book called Happier Now. And I mean, I really felt, like, honestly, like I was breaking roots. Like I was slapping my family in the face.
Yeah. I mean, cause you were.
Cause I were. Thank you. I was. Thank you. Exactly. I was 100%. And most of them have joined. Some of them are like, what? But you know, one of the other things I just want to talk about, Joy, I do feel that there is this, when I was raising money, so Happier has gone through a lot of transitions, like any entrepreneurial venture. When I first started, we had a gratitude app. It was a tech company. Mm-hmm. I raised money for it. And I remember I was talking to one of the investors. That's not what Happier is anymore, but that's what it used to be. And I was talking to this investor and he said, you know what? I think that my suffering is what makes me really smart and creative. I think if we have a bunch of happy and joyful people running around, we're gonna have a really stupid world. And I was like, oh, and my mom, by the way, you know, my mom is a pianist, a really amazing pianist. And her argument is that all the genius pianists and creatives, it was because they suffered. This is actually not supported by scientific research. I'm not gonna geek out on that. But I want you to talk a little bit about that, because I do find, I do hear those overtones in our world as well, of like, happy-go-lucky, you know, that means you're not deep enough, or you're not really feeling things enough, you know, because if you really felt things, you could see how bad life is, you know what I mean? Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, again, I keep going back to this binary, right? I say a lot in the book, I talk a lot in the book about and, right? Both things are true, right? It doesn't mean that because you're happy-go-lucky or you feel joy that you don't feel or experience anything else. Many things can be true, right? You can be highly intelligent and joyful. You don't have to suffer by choice. And P.S., we don't have to suffer by choice. And that's something we can all stand to learn more of, is that it is a choice. But this idea of suffering, I think, is so inherent specifically in certain cultures, right? As a way forward, like from the, it's kind of a rising from the ashes mentality, you know, but don't ever feel too good about it. Cause if you feel too good about it, then you're going to become one of those people where it's like, no, we can feel all of those things. We can experience all of those things. But I do think so much of it is cultural. And so much of it is really based on, I don't just mean the culture as in where you're from, but the culture of your home.
Yeah.
Right. Like what you were raised to know is true. And if you were raised by folks that believe that to be true, there is very likely a part of you that may believe that too. So I think sometimes where you talked a bit about breaking these sort of roots, I thought about what you did by starting Happier was breaking generational, you know, things that needed to be broken.
Yes.
It was really about this embedded part of your culture that you really did break. You severed
100%,
it.
100%, I did. And when I was, you know, one of the things my teacher, when I was really beginning my recovery from burnout, it wasn't just burnout, it was kind of a breakdown of being. I just wasn't aligned with anything. But I had this teacher and she said to me, you know, you're doing this not just for yourself. You're breaking these things for Mia. Mia's my daughter. And it's very, very true, because Mia has grown up in a household where we can be sad, but there's also tremendous joy. And one of the things, one of the memories she and I often talk about, I love to share this, when my grandma passed away that I talked about, there was, you know, we had a funeral, then everyone came back to my parents' house. And my other cousins were there. My grandma was an amazing baker. She made these unbelievable cakes. I'm talking about like 9 layers, all kinds of like amazing things. And we got, you know, so everyone's back from the funeral. Obviously, everyone's crying, really heavy feelings. And then my cousins and I and my daughter Mia were in this heated debate about which cake was the best. And it was obviously this very loving, joyful debate. And we were laughing. And I remember I had this moment of like, you ever like elevate above the situation? And I realized like, of course we were so sad, but there was also so much joy for her, with her. And I think that to me is exactly what you and I have been talking about is
100%.
We can feel sad, we can grieve, and we can also find a moment of joy within that. It doesn't mean we don't care. It doesn't mean we are stupid. It doesn't mean we are callous. Yeah. It means we are human.
And that is a respite that we deserve to have.
That's right. I love that. Cindy, thank you so much for being here. Again, everyone, this will be in your show notes and your follow-up email, but this is Cindy's beautiful book. It's called Microjoys, Finding Hope, Especially When Life Is Not Okay. You can find it at your favorite bookseller. The link will be in your follow-up email and the show notes, of course. Cindy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm really, really grateful for the joy that you've brought to everyone. And the other thing, I saw a bunch of questions in chat. People were asking about my journal that's coming out in October. So all of you are, a lot of people are asking what the bonuses are. Go to nataliekogan.com journal. You can find out. But in very short, when you order a copy, I made you this digital art gift pack with notes to self and my art, and you get it immediately. But you do have to go to my website and fill out a little form. So just to answer that question, thank you, awesome humans, for making time for joy today. Thank you for welcoming Cindy and her wisdom and insight and joyful being, Cindy. I just have to tell you, you bring this light, and it's not just the sunshine that I now see clearly behind you. You are the sunshine. Thank you. I am so grateful for your insights, but also just for the purity and genuineness in which you share them. You've given us all a lot of gifts today. So thank you so much. Thank you, awesome humans, for making time for you and for joy. Look out for an email from me about September's Awesome Human Podcast. We have it planned, but it's a secret. It's going to be really exciting. And I hope you all, I love to give homework at the end of my podcast, Cindy. So your homework today is to find a couple moments of micro joy.
And then send them to me on
and
social
send them
media.
To Cindy, or send them to natalie@happier.com, or find Cindy on social. That's your homework. Find some moments of micro joy and let me or Cindy know what they were, because when you share your moment of joy, it'll inspire lots of other people to find
theirs.
And that's how we move forward as awesome humans. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you.
Have a really wonderful rest of your day.
Bye, everyone.
All right, awesome humans. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. And I would love to know what resonated. What questions do you have? What are you excited to practice? So send us an email to team@happier.com. And please rest assured, if you send an email that you'd love for me to read, I will always get it in my inbox. My team will send it to me. Let's stay in touch so you can keep practicing skills to help you struggle less and thrive more in work and life. The best way to do it is to go to happier.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I promise you, I would never send you spam. It's just more practices, skills, and stories to help you embrace your inner awesome human. I can't wait to see you next week.